Elvis. Welcome, Loopers for Life, game number 29 here in the Tal Grace Marketing and Media Studio. My man, Cousin T-Rock from the block is on the DJ set, bumping it up. Got to bring some joy out there, T.
That's right, man.
Got to bring some joy. We got a lot of news to kind of cover on a really newsless time.
Yeah.
You know?
We do have a lot of news.
Yeah, you just going to play music the whole time?
I think I might.
I mean, you just, let's do that, just that whole music.
I think
that,
I might.
All right, yeah, there you go.
There we go. We'll roll it out here.
I know. I mean, you know, we could do that when we get the DJ table that's in here.
That's right.
I'm asking Santa Claus for the DJ table.
Yep. Hey, wiki.
Again, you know, welcome to game number 29. A lot of news on a newsless week. Like I said, Tiger Woods Hero World Challenge is back post-COVID with Tiger being there. We talked about his influences last week. Definitely want to circle back on that. Probably the biggest news story, though, of the week in the golfing world is Lee Elder, former PGA Tour player. Hey, there we go. Passing away just like my earphones.
Wrong button.
There. I'm glad we're not live today. I mean, but, you know, Lee was such a huge giant in the game of golf, made significant strides for the African Americans that are playing the game today, broke down all the barriers, truly, and broke them down in the 70s, or excuse me, in the early 60s. And then into the 70s, making himself known as being the first African-American to play at Augusta National. And again, for the second straight week, very fortunate that my cousin T-Rock from the block is a member of one of the great families in Kentucky golf, the Ridge family.
That's right.
And have a gentleman who is Lee Elder's best friend on the phone, and I'm going to let you take the introduction to this.
Yeah, so look, my uncles Jack and Bill were really close to Lee, right? So Lee was an ambassador for Club Pro Products. He helped promote kind of what we do at Club Pro, and Bill and Jack became really close friends with him throughout the years, and he's just been a fantastic friend to not only our family but to Club Pro and to, you know, really to all the people kind of in the game of golf. And we got Bill on the phone. What's up, Bill?
Hey, Josh T, how y'all doing?
I'm doing great, Bill.
How are you, Bill?
So, you know, look, so Bill had lined up Lee to be on our podcast back around
week three. That was podcast three, and we're going to definitely talk about how pumped up I was.
Yeah.
And we were, because it was just our third podcast. It was after the Masters.
It would have been awesome, and I had talked to Lee the day before, and he was excited about it, and then for whatever reason that morning, he felt ill and just couldn't make it. So, you know, obviously that shows you that, you know, he was kind of on the decline here for the last year or so. And he's such a great guy. And Bill, it's sad week for golf.
Yeah, it's sad week for the game of golf. I mean, Lee was ambassador for the game of golf, probably up there with the top players, I mean, in the world, the Gary players and the Jack Nicklauses. What he did for the game of golf will live on forever.
Oh, there's no doubt. And I mean, you know, and I think one of the great things that you look about with his career, not only was he the first African-American to play on, you know, the grounds of Augusta National as a professional, but he was also the first African-American to make the Ryder Cup team in 1979. But even more importantly, I bet you if I was willing to ask him, I would have asked him this question. What was the day like when he went down and played in South Africa as the first professional integrated tournament? And that was in the mid-60s, I believe, or 72, I believe, or something like that, to where he was playing as a guest of Gary Player.
Yes, I talked to actually Gary Player about that and talked to Lee Elder both about that when I was invited out to the Bobby Jones Award at Pebble Beach. And Gary Player just was just a huge fan of Lee Elder because he did that. And it was a time of the Pike Day where it wasn't a very good time to be a black man in South Africa.
Right.
Now, Bill, Gary was one of the big reasons that Lee got invited to be a honorary star at the Masters, correct?
100%. Gary Player pushed course, Lee Elder was always upset he wasn't getting his recognition. He thought he should have been in the World Golf Hall of Fame, which I heard him say on TV the other day he'll probably get that now. It's a shame he didn't get it while he was alive. Lee Elder is one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. He became a very, very good friend. I met Lee Elder at Kearney Hills at the senior event in 1991, the first person to use the buggy cover. He purchased it from me there. He's always gave me a hard time.
Is that
it?
That's how y'all met, Bill?
Yeah.
There?
Yeah.
What a man, you just went.
1991. He was the first person, and he got every other senior tour player to use that week. I was at Kearney, then we went to Atlanta, then we went to the Brickyard Crossing in Indianapolis to follow the senior tour, trying to sell buggy covers and get the senior players using them. And every senior tour player just about on the tour had one in their hands.
So, wow.
Luckily, it rained all three of those tournaments.
Yeah. So you had to have some, or was it cold?
And they had to have them. And I got pictures of the event where almost every single golf. That's back when all the senior tour players rode, especially when it rained.
Yeah, right.
As a matter of fact, the buggy cover is one of the big reasons the senior tour quit using carts, because they thought it was such an advantage to have the buggy cover because it kept them warm and dry. Players didn't have them.
Bill, you brought up that tournament, and I mean, and for those that are listening that don't know, you know, Kearney Hill and the senior tour, before that, the senior tour has always made a stop when it came through in Kentucky, and most like all of our golf stops are in Lexington, which is kind of
weird.
It is ironic. I mean, you know, it's kind of, they must be going by, you know, what football team is the best in the state.
Well, so. Okay. Yeah, well, hey, I can't talk
Bill,
this week.
You know, that tournament was, it was a stop. I mean, you know, all the great players came to Kearney Hills or Griffin Gate prior, and you know, it's we have to kind of go back into the history of that, but I find it kind of funny that that's when it started, and then you had three rain periods on the tour stops.
So Bill threw something out there, Josh, that I've got to give Bill a shout out for this, because many people don't know this. So the covers that go on the carts, right? You know, the vinyl covers.
Right.
Bill invented those.
Yeah, the one that pulls down.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that pulls
down. No, that's called the cabana.
Not the cabana. You're talking about the one, the full cover.
I'm talking about the full cover. Well, Bill invented the cabana too, but the covers and the cabanas and tic-tac-putt and the coolers.
Oh,
there's so much in the game of golf that Bill invented. Bill's the mastermind behind all this, so it's pretty cool.
Talk about those inventions like that. I mean, what came up with the cart cover, Bill?
I had just moved to Georgia, North Georgia Mountains. We had bought a golf course called Magnolia Ridge. It was in the North Georgia Mountains near Dalton, Georgia, in Chatsworth, Georgia. And I went through that winter in 87, 88. And I saw a need to increase play in the wintertime, and it got a little cool in the winter there, kind of like Kentucky, but not quite as cool. But I wanted to keep play going all season long. And there was only one company at the time called Tampa G making cart covers, and it was wasn't very well made. I ordered like six of them. They came in, half of the stitching was out of them, and I called them and tell them I wasn't happy with, they wouldn't do anything about it. So, I had a girlfriend at the time who was in the carpet business. Her dad owned a carpet mill, and, got some material, and they helped me sew one together. I took one of my old golf carts over there, sewed one together. My design, nobody's ever made one portable to fit in a bag before. Nobody ever made one size fits all, and made a cart cover people could take with them the golf course to golf course, or the golf courses could put them on one cart. It fit all the brands, and
so
the other one wasn't very well fitting. And I made one that fit real well, and I went to a trade show, and the first guy walked through the door was from Golf Day Magazine, ordered 500 from me in like 1 minute when
wow.
I went to the show.
And
the company took off.
Yeah, so the play didn't matter after that. You had play increasing right there at Magnolia Ridge. I mean, did you have more play, though, with the people using them?
100%.
Right.
Every golf course that started buying the buggy cover increased their play, and that was my big promotional deal on the buggy cover. You'll pay for it in just a few few rounds of golf, and people did because they had
right.
rounds of golf when they wouldn't have, and people played golf when they wouldn't. Go ahead and have on a rainy day instead of giving rain checks out. People keep playing. Scrambles, everybody would want one to take to mm-hmm. On a scramble and play golf, and it increased play tremendously.
Our
golf course, every golf course across the country and the world, really.
Right, Bill, and I mean, you know, and right now, I mean, you, as a club pro, you have customers and members, and you know they're bringing their own. They're putting them on.
Right.
They're posting them up for the winter as their cart, which you know it truly is a game changer.
It increased play for us at Oxmoor because you got a bunch and we put them on the carts and we just had them there and it got people out there to play because of them.
We were creative over back in the day. I mean,
we were creative.
We were ahead of the thing and doing podcasts back when there was no podcasts and all that. But here, let's go back to Lee.
Get back to Lee.
I mean, you know, the Bob. You talk about the Bob Jones Award and what that means to the game of golf. I mean, and it is one of the it's presented to those that have just shown the pure ambassadorship and you know everything that Bobby Jones stood for, stewardship of the game of golf. And you know, and Lee's influence just really kind of presented across the course of time. I mean, you know, because he was on, you know, the Champions Tour and he played a lot of great golf on the Champions Tour, played with the likes. I mean, guys like Calvin Pete and Jim Dent, who, you know, kind of paved the way for those guys to come out and play, you know, after him in the 80s.
He paved the way for Tiger. I mean, so Tiger's giving him a lot of credit.
What was that like? And what was the difference between, you know, him winning that award on Pebble Beach and then him having the first shot?
I think the Bobby Jones Award was bigger for him. I remember we were at the PGA show, and Lee and his wife stayed with us we rent a big house, and he stays with us every year at the PGA show. Him and Sharon have been doing it for years. Lee and Sharon go out with us, hang out with us the whole night long. Lee's a trooper. He enjoys going out, having a good time. Lee and Sharon never drink. We do plenty of that for him.
I took some money from Lee at Topgolf.
Oh, that's
yeah. He goes to Topgolf and hit balls every year since that opened up. We used to go to another place called Dewey's. We was indoor golf every year before that and hang out all night long. He'd go to the Easy Go parties and the parties with us, and he hangs in the booth all day long.
Right, I remember meeting him plenty of times there in the booth. So the Bobby Jones, he thought that was more of a honor than what he
thought that was a tremendous honor. I remember being at the PGA show. They told him at the PGA show, and he couldn't run. They said, "You can't tell anybody, but I just got the call just a few minutes ago. They wanted to come to come see him, and I got the Bobby Jones Award. Please don't tell anybody. Nobody's supposed to know." And he was so excited. Him and Sharon were so excited and happy. Said, "You got to come." And sure enough, he sent me the tickets to go. And my brother, our team went out from Club Pro, went out to be with him. And my brother Jack went, and we got to hang out with him all during the golf tournament, Pebble Beach. And he introduced us to everybody, of course. And of course, he introduced everybody comes by the booth to see him at the PGA show. All the great teachers.
Yeah.
And Josh, you got to talk about his golf swing. I mean, he had the anti-hook swing that was just iconic because nobody had a golf swing like his, and there's no way he was going to hook a golf ball.
What was your favorite golfing memory with him out on the golf course, Bill?
You know, just his stories.
Yeah,
I mean, stories.
He's got some cool stories
too about the Titanic gambler guy that made all the money in golf, and Teak probably can tell you some of those.
Yeah, have you heard that story, Josh?
Well,
so basically, they would put Lee in rags at these country clubs, right? And at train stations.
Right.
And so this Titanic Thompson guy, he would pick fights on these trains with other golfers and say, "Well, I'll play you for this and I'll play you for that." And he'd find these well-to-do golfers. Well, they'd have Lee play somewhere. And once he'd get off, they'd have Lee one over and he'd shine somebody's shoes. And he goes, "Well, I'll take this guy and I'll go play you."
Right.
Behold, he's a professional golfer, but you know,
and
they're
Titanic
hustling.
Thompson was one of the great players and known hustlers back in the day. I mean, on the Texas swing and Oklahoma. I mean, he was a gunslinger. And so, you know, we're talking about in the mid-50s at this point in time. I mean, you know, when you look at his career, he first turned professional at 1959. in 1959. So when he's putting these hustles on, you know, he's doing this in the mid-50s.
Well, he was a kid, you
know,
probably.
Coming through. So, I mean, yeah. It's great that you can have all those stories with him. And you know, and you talk about what he did and for all those, like at the PGA show, Bill, you know, it was an honor to be able to meet them. I mean, I can think of all the times that I was at the PGA show and had the opportunity to meet some of the game greats. And, you know, one of which was Lee, and I got not only to meet with him, but, you know, being, you know, with my cousin T,
yeah.
I mean, I got to talk to him and meet him. You know, all the others are in passing by, or, you know, sure. I'm definitely not standing in line to get an autograph.
Right, me either.
I mean, but, and I'll tell you a great story later, but, you know, he brought people to your booth.
He did.
Brought people to the game of golf. He brought people, you know, across the world into the game.
The thing that was so great about Lee, and I think Bill will agree with me on this, he was just such a great person.
Yeah, right.
You know, he was just a good guy. He was nice. He wasn't, I've never saw him be ugly to anybody. He was just a good, good person.
He was unbelievable. Anybody's name, you meet him one time, I'd introduce him to somebody. They come to the PGA show the next year and he'd remember their name. Yep. I don't know how he did it, but there's not one awesome. Person he wouldn't remember their name.
Yep.
It's just amazing. Anybody want to stop him while we're out and say, "So are you Leo?" You know, he'd see, talk to him forever. And we'd have to pull him away to get away from him because he wanted to just sit there and talk to him. You know, he did win the senior event in Lexington. He won 8 times on the senior tour, 4 times on the PGA tour, and he won like a 12 or 14 times on the black tour. Nobody could beat him. He won 12 times in a row on the tour before they would let him play the PGA tour.
Right. And they, you know, that was going to be one of my great questions was tell I say great questions, but I really wanted to know like another name of an African-American player
mm-hmm.
that we never heard of.
Yeah. I
bet you he would have been able to say, "Hey, you know, you need to know about this guy."
Yeah.
You know, and that would, and so if anybody can ever tell me about that guy, I would love to know. And I'll do my own research on that. But you know, during his time, and you know, again, I kind of go back to what Gary, you know, what you said earlier, you know, his relationship with Gary Player. I could only imagine what that meant to the country of South Africa to have him come and play in that tournament down there in Johannesburg back in when he did it for Gary Player. So, Bill, thank you for your time today.
Oh, hey, real quick, did you know, Bill? For a brief period held a Guinness Book world record?
No, tell me about it.
Bill, what was your world record?
727 holes at bobolink.
He played 720 holes in one day.
From midnight to midnight.
Midnight, 24 hours straight. Now, I've played 108 holes.
Touching 720. Isn't that nuts?
Gold balls at night, and then I played 18 holes in 26 minutes.
18 holes.
And what'd you shoot? You shot 33 on one of those nines.
One of those could I hold out on the last hole.
Did you start with glow balls? You started with glow balls and ended with glow balls, right?
Started with glow balls at midnight and finished with glow balls at midnight the next night.
We got to look that up because I guarantee you, I would like to know what it is. And with LED, those LED golf balls, those will really get going. Hey, real quick, Bill.
This was when they first brought the little stick in and those golf
balls. Oh, I could only imagine playing with those golf balls.
Yeah.
That's like even more impressive.
Yeah.
That was hard because those were like a rock. But they let a guy play 12 holes one day and 12 next to beat me. He played 800 and something.
Well, see, that's not fair.
Wow.
But that's all right.
Well, you know, again, your experiences, you know, Bill, in the game of golf and everything that you've done, you know, and creatively, you know, with the buggy covers that have made a difference. My one question to you on the buggy covers, though, real quick. Did you pay people or were they paying, like, were you paying Lee Elder to have it and giving him one?
Every senior tour player bought him for $100 a piece, including this Arnold Palmer. And at the time, some of the companies like Bullet, some of the companies would buy them and give them to their players.
Right.
And we'd put the logo on them. I've got a picture from Indianapolis that shows almost probably 50 carts there, and every one of them has a buggy because it poured down rain that whole week in
That's awesome.
Indianapolis, luckily for us.
Right.
Nobody else wanted that to happen, but we sure did. And and it made every senior tour player after that had a cart cover, every single one of them.
Well,
and they'd ride when it rained. And we're a big reason that the senior tour quit allowing the guys to ride it.
Yeah,
right. Right. Well, again, for everything that you've done for the game of golf, this is another week that where we have been very thankful for the Ridges. Thank you. And Bill, and specifically, you know, for you and your friends and the Elder family, who I know you're very close with. Please pass along our condolences here. Mine.
Yes, it was an honor.
It was an honor to meet him, Bill. And you know, and I would say this. I mean, you know, it has to be pretty special for you to know that you had such a special friend who influenced the game of golf on another level.
On Monday, before I found Monday morning early, I was calling Lee Monday to book his tickets for him and Sharon to come to the PGA show and the dates. I was calling him on Monday to do that and check and make sure they were coming, which they always do. I knew his health was bad, so I was making sure he was going to be healthy enough to make it. He'd been on that oxygen tank since the Masters, and I was calling just to make sure, I was going to have him see if he was able to do the podcast, was healthy enough to do the podcast. I was going to ask him to do that this week, and I was going to ask him about, I wanted some of the Bobby Jones hats that Lee Elder hats for, say, 1975 on them that Stephen Curry did, who was a big buddy of Lee Elder, so. I was trying to get a few hats for him for Christmas presents. So,
yeah,
so it's just
cool.
shame that I made the call a week late. But, yep. But he was not, the way I understand, he wasn't talking very well anyway at that point in time.
Yeah, so. he was a giant of the game and definitely will be missed, and very grateful for everything that he did for the sport.
Yep. Bill, thanks, man. Appreciate you calling in.
Anytime.
Take care, Bill.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bill. All right.
So, Josh, I got to ask.
Yeah.
Golf Digest, I'm looking at it, right? Came out with, this is last night, the top 10 instructors in Kentucky.
Oh, my gosh. Really? You're going right there, right now? I mean,
I'm looking.
Do you not want to talk about anything else?
I'm looking at this list, Josh, and look, you and Corey are too humble to say it, but boy, is this thing wrong. I mean, look, I mean, what you guys are doing over at the Golf Academy, I guess you got to be involved to know, but I mean, look at the results. Who's got more pros out there? Who's got more juniors doing what you're doing, what you guys do? And for these 10 guys to be on this list above your two names, it's kind of ridiculous.
I appreciate you saying that, Teague. And, you know, I am very glad for everybody that is on that list.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Very, very pumped up for them, and hopefully they can celebrate their successes. I didn't even know that was out.
Yeah, so it came out last night.
I did it. I mean, I always sometimes I read Facebook, sometimes I don't. And I'm just joshing you right now. I saw that list come out. I saw that list come out last night. And, you know, if anybody deserves to be on there, there is no doubt that Mr. Kaufman, my partner.
Right.
I mean, he's probably, and you know, in all due respect to everybody on there, there's nobody teaching at an elite level like he
That's what
is
I'm
right
saying.
Now. Except for there's that Jeff Pierce in there. Now, that guy right there, you know, he coaches Brooks Koepka and helps him on the short game area. He's
the guy at Old Stone.
Oh yeah, he's the real deal. I mean, there's no doubt. There's a lot of real deals on there. There's okay. Let's be honest, but
I mean, Mike Thomas is on there, list, but Mike's not really Kentucky based anymore.
If for that list to be considered the real deal for you know the state of Kentucky, if you don't have Corey Kaufman on that list, then that list is not the real deal.
And right. I mean, and so, that's where I'm
you
at.
Know, and I say that as a journalist right now with a microphone and headphones on. So not only as my life partner, I mean, you know, just kind of taking up. But
look, yeah, I recognize a couple of names. Mitchell Moore is obviously a guy that does some stuff with you guys.
There's
Mike Thomas, who's on our podcast. I mean, but Mike's Florida based now, and he's not really a Kentucky teacher.
Well,
anymore.
Again, we don't have to drop everybody that they need to go see these guys over us. So we don't need to name names on that right there. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. I mean, you know, again, for that list to be considered the real deal, that name has to be on there. And it's not Josh Snyder. It's Corey Kaufman. And it has been since 2011 mm-hmm. when him and I started partnering up. Now, between 11 and 15, you could probably put Josh Snyder on there more than him. But I was a head pro at that time, so nobody really thought I was teaching.
Right.
So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, you were cart jockeying.
Yeah, I was cart jockeying and mm-hmm. having, you know, my guys win high school regionals and yeah. first team All-State.
Right, you know, mean, nothing, you know, nothing big.
Yeah, not going to win college tournaments. And they're all like, oh, who's this Josh Snyder guy?
Right.
But, you know, he's just a cart jockey, which, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I was. I was a glorified cart boy.
Yep.
But
that's what,
you know,
being a head pro is.
It's interesting to see those lists. It's great to see everybody so excited. And, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, that list is only going to be defined by your students.
Yep.
And if your students are out there getting it done, who cares if you're on that list?
Is it though?
Nah.
Is that because I'm looking
that's
at
my
these
theory.
I mean, some of these guys don't even have people playing.
Well, I mean, again, I mean, you know, once you get in the old boys club in the game of golf, guess what happens?
Yeah, I understand.
You stay in the old boys club mm-hmm. in the game of golf. I mean, and, you know, and that's, you know, kind of go back to Lee Elder real quick, Teague, you know, and on the old boys club. I mean, the things that he had to accomplish in the mid-60s, could you imagine? I mean, you know, realistically, you know, and for the game of golf, I mean, because, you know, that stuff was going on in basketball and football at that point in time, and that definitely had more eyes on it. But, you know, what was going on the golf course, think about whose eyes were on that. Those were not just the general public. Those were the old boy network.
Look,
I mean, you know, that was the good old boy network.
Josh, I was sworn to secrecy here, so I'm not going to reveal names.
Mm.
But it is one of the most well-known golfers of all time, if not the most well-known golfer of all time, was very anti-Lee Elder. Didn't want him in the clubhouse. Didn't want him on the golf course. Didn't think it was right.
Right.
Was very racist in a lot of ways to him, and did everything he could to block it. Now, guys like Gary Player stepped up and made sure that didn't happen, but there were some guys that didn't want a Lee Elder out there.
Oh, I guarantee it.
And it's pretty amazing that some of that stuff hadn't come out, honestly, but in due time, maybe it will.
Oh,
but
I'm
it's,
sure it will.
It's interesting what he's had to overcome. What he had to overcome to get to where he was.
And just, you know, and taking up the game of golf. I mean, not just overcome to where all the stuff that he was doing, you know, on the golf course,
yeah.
but just, you know, in that regards, taking up the game of golf. I mean, you know, being able to go sneak out. I mean, because essentially that's what Lee was doing.
Yep.
He was sneaking on the golf courses in the early 50s. You know, when
oh, yeah.
and that was the golfing boom. And that's when Arnold Palmer came, you know, and then the big three. I mean, you know, Arnold Palmer brought golf to TV. There is no doubt. And then the big three took it to another level. And man, I mean, you know, watching the match this weekend, which I watched a little
okay.
bit.
We're
going to get to that. But I mean, it made me appreciate how good the Shell's Wonderful World of Golf
right,
were.
Right.
I mean, you know, because right. those were actually golf matches. I mean, and how fun that is. And I'm looking for the holiday schedule on the Golf Channel, which is terrible now
yeah.
on their coverage of everything. But you know what? If you play a full day of those Wonderful World of Golfs, it's the greatest channel that's ever been. So,
right.
I mean, you know, but to that point, I mean, you know, he was sneaking on the golf course, bringing the game to the masses, qualified for the U.S. Open in 66.
Yep.
You know, one of the first African-Americans ever to be able to do that, be able to play, you know, at Augusta. I was glad that he got that honor and had the opportunity to be recognized because he was in bad health. I mean, you know, and that day, Teague, you know, us just starting off the podcast,
mm-hmm.
we weren't even in this magnificent, you know, magnificent.
Yeah, we were up
studio.
In the, right.
Yeah, we were at the table right mm-hmm. there and getting started. I was so excited to be able to have that call. And
yep.
if you remember right, you know, we kind of had to rearrange it. And,
yep.
and the whole day, and as we did, we must have called how many times? 20?
No, yeah, we called him a bunch.
Called Bill.
And look, and I had talked to him for quite a while the day before, and he was excited about doing it. And it just, you know, obviously he must have had some health things come up, and yeah. it's a shame. But.
Well, it is a shame, but I mean, you know, he accomplished a lot. And like Bill said, I mean, you know, all the wins that he had across the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the being able to break down the barrier in South Africa, when I read that, I was like, man, damn.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, that's the darn.
And kudos to Gary Player for being the ambassador of that, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, there is no doubt. I mean, we ought to try to get Gary Player on this thing. I mean, he has to love Louisville, Kentucky.
Let's do
it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's reach out. We'll reach out. So let's go to, you know, something that we need to talk about is the match.
Okay.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, man.
It was Friday afternoon.
Yeah. So I watched it.
Mediocre at best, right?
Yeah. Look, Koepka came off as an arrogant jerk to me. I liked DeChambeau a little bit more after it. I thought he was pretty humble through the whole thing. You know, obviously both those dudes could play, right? I mean, watching the win, I think the real winner of that was the Wynn golf course. That golf course looked incredible to me. But I just...
$550, it ought to be incredible.
12 holes?
Well,
what was that about?
That was kind of cheesy.
All TV made.
That's TV made, and I respect the 12-hole thing. I really do. I respect.
Why?
Because it is a quicker time frame. I think that
you think that's what the play was?
Definitely. And so Jack Nicklaus has been an advocate of the 12-hole course, and if you look across the pond, you see some of these golf courses that are designed like
that. That's fine.
And so you know, and then they came up with the best TV routing and all that. But that's fine. You know, realistically, I 100% agree with you in the sense of Brooks played how Brooks is, you know, and he's that guy. He does not care about anybody else.
Nope.
He just wants to go do his thing. Yep. And, you know, and he is the new Shooter McGavin.
I mean, he is. You know, he really he definitely, is.
If Brooks Koepka is ever listening to this podcast, please, please start going every time that you do it. If he starts doing a shooter every time, can you imagine?
He's
that guy. And Bryson DeChambeau is now happy. I mean, everybody kind of likes him.
It was weird to me because I wasn't sure when they could hear what they could hear with Phil and Barkley,
right?
Which Phil Mickelson needs to be doing color commentating because that was awesome. Faldo could do that. Why didn't Faldo break this stuff down like Phil does? I thought that was really cool how Phil would break down the shots, what they're thinking. Oh no, he needs to be doing this. It would get a lot more technical that I thought was awesome.
Right.
That you don't normally get in golf coverage.
He's on another level.
He is on another level.
And Faldo was probably on that level back in the day, but nobody wants to listen to a British guy like that.
I don't know, man. I thought it was really, really cool to hear the way he was doing the commenting on the actual
one of match. My best PGA stories was actually my last one that I was at, and I think it was 2016. Had a great week, met, you know, that was Justin Thomas's week,
right,
and everything like that. And then on the flyout, I was, you know how you got to ride that train across from Orlando,
yep,
and I'm sitting in the very last one and right there, and like literally I pretty much just right next to Nick Faldo, and I'm
not even
pay any attention to him. I was like, damn, that's a big old dude, right? and I look over and I was like, damn, that's Nick Faldo.
Yeah.
And I actually said, and we're just right there, and I said, Sir Faldo.
Did you call him Sir Faldo?
I called him Sir. I said, Sir Faldo, I just want to thank you for everything that you do for the game of golf. And he shook my hand, and his hand was huge.
He's massive.
He is a big man.
He's a big dude.
I mean, he had on like Guns N' Roses t-shirt. Yeah. He was flying out, you know, and shook his hand, and he went the other way, and I went to the other terminal.
That's cool.
The opportunity to meet players, mm-hmm, and just be able to, you know, say, mm-hmm, that, because that's better than an autograph. I don't need your autograph.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But let me tell you, thank you for everything.
That's a memory.
Oh, yeah, Sir Faldo. I mean, and he was big. And then he was flying out to Torrey Pines to do the golf right afterwards, which, I mean, again, you know, the PGA Show and talking about all the famous golfers that go there. We talked about it a little bit last time.
Yeah.
And don't want to go too far from the match here, but it is and always has been a tremendous opportunity for those, you know, and those vendors like your uncle. I mean, you know, think about that. He went to that convention.
If it wasn't for
$500 right away.
Well, and that wasn't actually, that was the Super Show, I think. But still, the PGA Show is the reason there's golf businesses around, because you're able to do some business. You know, one of the things that I thought was really funny is Barkley said something about 12 holes, and Koepka shot back is saying they ain't going 12. I mean, it's just the arrogance of that guy. And he did, man. He put a beat down on Bryson.
But he beat him down.
Yeah.
I like how they asked him, like, hey, you know what? You want to play with him again and do his game? He's like, probably not.
Yeah. He's like, we put it to bed. We settled it.
Could Bryson hear? I mean, they did a good job of this, but really didn't like this a part of the thing. If everybody could hear what they were saying and he was saying it, then, you know, I would have been Bryson chiming in and be like, hey, Brooks, and right. start going on. But Brooks is saying it.
I wasn't real sure who could hear what. Right.
Yeah.
And I wish they would have made that a little bit more clear. Even Phil during the broadcast was like, I don't know if he can hear me, but right. da, 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 da. I hope he can't hear me, but da, da, yeah, da, da.
He said that
I thought that was weird. Time, right. They should have. That should have been a little more clear on, and then they would chime back in. That they said something about Bryson's shoes, and Bryson's like, "Oh yeah, you like those?" And it's like, when can they hear you? When can they not? And I don't know. I thought that was
it was definitely made for TV. It was not the Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, and that's what I desperately want. Or give me something like the Skins game again.
Yeah.
You know, where they're playing for something. I mean, this, you know, it was made for charity. Oh, let's have another drive. Oh, let's get some mulligans and
right.
You know, I'll put $50,000 on that. Well, of course you will. I mean, because right. you're not putting it down there. Wynn's putting it down.
Right.
Wynn's like, hey, I'm going to give you an extra blah, blah, blah.
Of course.
And, you know, none of that money was shelled out of their pockets.
No.
And so, but, you know, again, it goes to what the game of golf does is it raises a lot of money for these charities.
It does. It does.
And that has a lot to do as, and we'll talk about this later, not this week, but it has a lot to do with the, you know, the tour having a nonprofit, mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is for the tax codes,
yep.
and, you know, versus a tour like Greg Norman starting that's going to be for profit and like the NBA has. And you know, and so it really is like a big thing that's forthcoming.
Right.
This other world tours and the PGA Tour is trying to put forth their best foot, but they're also staying in the good old boy network.
Yeah.
They're staying there with the good old boys, and I mean, and you know, slow to change, and that may hurt them in the long run. Now, you know, this upcoming week, Tiger Woods has already said. I mean, you know, now he's, you know, he's made his appearance on Twitter, and he's hosting the World Challenge.
Hey, show this camera right here, your shirt.
Ah.
See. Little the goat, which is the tiger. That's a cool shirt.
Man, I
love
he
it.
Is, oh, he, it's a great is shirt. A cool shirt. I mean, I love cool t-shirts. But this guy is still the goat.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Mean, he moves the needle. I mean,
there's no doubt.
The pimp of war money that the yep. PGA Tour is going to put out there. There is nobody that's more pimping than this dude.
No man.
I mean,
sure.
It's been proven, and you know, and he really has shattered the. You know, golf world again, and by saying, okay, hey, you know, there is a possibility, but it might not be me climbing Mount Everest and being
right.
But you know what he did say in that, and as he kind of both in the golf world, or excuse me, the Golf Digest interview, and you know, yesterday at the Hero World Challenge, is that you know I might not be at the top of Mount Everest, but I'm going to climb. And his mountain's pretty high, bro.
Man.
I mean, he's probably like on Kalapajigo or whatever, you know, one of these big things. And here's the thing. I mean, you know, he also said, you know, Mr. Hogan did it, and he provided the blueprint. I might not play on the full-time PGA Tour, but I think I could suit up for a couple of days and play golf.
That's true.
And I mean, you know, and if he can ramp up, I mean, you know, there's, hey, I'm going to ramp up for a few events as Mr. Hogan did. No reason I can't do that, and I feel that way.
He's right.
I mean, that's the Masters. That's the U.S.
He's
Open.
Right. He's going to play the majors and, I mean, you know, TPC, maybe me, some of the, his favorite
me,
courses.
I mean, but I would love to see this guy at the 150th play-in of the Open Championship
yeah.
at St. Andrews next yep. year. The list next year, Teague, of courses hosting the majors is pretty special.
Oh, for I mean, sure.
You got Augusta National. Then you got Southern Hills in Tulsa.
Yep.
All right. Which you, was going to be in Bedminster, New Jersey, at a Trump golf course, but the PGA is like,
we're going to distance ourselves from that.
I mean, yeah, okay. We're not in the Republican Party.
Okay.
All right. Except for everybody that's a PGA member is probably in the Republican yep. Party. But then the third place right there, so it's Southern Hills in Tulsa, which is just recently restored and one of the great golf courses sure. in Midwest. Then it's at the Country Club of Brookline up
yep.
in Boston.
Yep.
You know, famous for what movie?
Oh, Bagger Vance?
No. The Greatest Game Ever Played.
Oh, The Greatest Game. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's where the U.S. Open was.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Francis Wee Met got the
That's right. Duh.
And I mean, you know, and then also it's
Bagger Vance. What I went Will Smith
comeback,
on you.
The greatest comeback that was ever, you know, mounted at first in the Ryder Cup history was, you know, the 1999.
Yeah.
Up there at Brookline. So and then they finish it, you know, the fourth major, the majors your last chance of greatness, whatever they used to call that, the PGA is now the Open Championship, and it's 150th.
I like the PGA being last.
I did too. I mean, you know, I really did. But, you know, I like Tiger saying there's a possibility of him coming out. And, I mean, you know, and to play a couple of these events, you know, we were just hoping that he could play, you know, with his son Charlie, like when we talked to Mike.
Yeah, playing in the PNC
father-son. Yeah, playing the PNC father-son. Let's, you know, let's get around. And now it looks like he can do that. If he can show up and play at the Masters, what it will continue to do for the game of golf,
right?
Moving the needles. And, I mean, and then if he can have, like, this thing that, hey, you know what, I'm Tiger Woods, I'll show up when I'll show up, and, you know, and play in the big ones, because that's what
I tell you what, man,
in a game of golf you can do that.
People are going to pay more attention if he plays, and then if he makes the cut, people watch more on the weekend.
Well, that's right. Well, so let's talk about making the cut. And this week there is no cut.
There is no cut.
We are again at the Hero World Challenge. This is a you know, Tiger Woods event down in the Bahamas. So he's got his—
will he be there?
Yeah, he's there. I mean, he's already there. So I mean, you know, he's there. He's gonna be riding around in a cart, be seen on TV, do his normal T-dub cheesiness. But I mean, you know, he is he's going to be a focal point. But you know what, Teague, there's 20 players in this field, and 10 of them have major championships.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty good. 10 major winners.
Wow.
And then you got guys like Victor Hovland and Matt Wolf, I think, is in there.
How'd you get Alexander. In this field? How do you get,
how do you
in, this
get
field?
In this? You got to be one of the best players in the world, number one. And obviously, the other half needs to be winning majors. So
I mean, because every name in it's a big name.
Yeah, it's huge. This is a Josh Nader tournament. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it is. I don't know how you pick this one. This is hard.
And this is played at Albany Golf Club in the Bahamas. I mean, it's Ernie Els design. It's 7,400 yards. It's a pretty cool golf course. If you can remember back in 2019, Justin and Tiger were paired together, and this when, you know, Justin, they both hit bombs, and it was kind of a blind thing, and Justin walked up, and he was looking for his ball, and he thought, you know, he kept on walking, and Tiger was like, hey, Jay. He's like, JT,
yeah, back here. Way back there.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, it was like Tiger is really ripping through things.
Yeah,
when he did that, you know, and he outdrove Justin, and it was like, wow. I mean, I can remember that. And then, you know, leading into what happened, you know, in the sense of everything else. So you know, I'm excited about this one because it is a really quality field. Henrik Stenson's in the field. He is the defending champion from 2019.
The only reason he's the last pick, too. The only reason he's in the field is because he's the defending champion.
$3.5 million on the line to the winner.
Jeez.
Yeah, how about that?
20 guys playing for that.
How about that? And, you know, 20 guys. Yeah, 20 guys playing for $3.5 million.
Unbelievable.
Let's go. Who's in the Old Boys Network now?
Unbelievable.
I mean, that's where it's at. And I think that, you know, when you look at it, Brooks and Bryson are in here.
Yeah.
That was the other thing about, and I'm going to bounce back to the match. Bryson was obviously great, but then he says, oh, you know, guys, I haven't played golf in 2 weeks.
What was that about?
Dude, come on, bro. He was like, oh, I don't want it to be an excuse, but then you're going to tell me that you're getting paid to play, and I'm right. Watching you, and you're playing like a chop,
yeah.
And it's because you haven't played golf in 2 weeks,
well,
but you've been eating protein bars, and I'm sure you're working out.
And if you really cared about beating Koepka, you're going to say he hadn't played in 2 weeks?
Bro, right. I mean, that was, yeah. And where Koepka was not going to lose that match.
No, man.
I mean, you know, he was shooting McGavin all the way.
To wrap that up, my favorite part of the match was the caddy interaction. I like how you hear when they go through the shot process and they talk about different things. I like that. I like being able to hear all that interaction.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and the Phil's thought process.
Thought process was incredible.
Those are good, and a lot of times that's muted in the coverage. You can get that. You can get that on the European Tour coverage.
Yeah.
You know, if you're over on Sky Sports and you want to watch a golf event. But, you know, kind of going back to this one, you know, with them being in the field, Rory coming into the field, first tournament post play of him ripping the shirt, going Incredible Hulk and showing the nipple, you know, which he freed the nipple over there in Dubai. So, I mean, you know, if he could free the nipple in Dubai, you've actually probably done some. You've done some right in the world.
He's made 5 out of 6 cuts. He's had 4 top 10s. He's my pick. I'm going Rory.
Well, you're going Rory. And here's my thing. there's two Justins in the field, and I'm just picking one of them. There's either and so, you know, I'm a homer. I'm going all the way, and it's either Justin Thomas or Justin Rose. Justin Rose probably has the upper advantage because he has a house here at the Bahamas. This is kind of like a home game for him.
He's made 7 of 7 cuts too. That's interesting.
He's been playing great. I mean, but you know, it's like this is the hardest game ever. I mean, Spieth's playing. Brooks, Bryson,
yeah,
Morikawa,
Hovland.
I mean, you know, Hovland. I mean, talk about the guys who are playing that Scheffler. Yes, Scheffler.
Answer, who's been incredible this year.
Had a great year. I mean, Victor Hovland, you said him.
Finau.
Finau, there you go. Is Wolf playing?
No.
He's not. Tony Finau. What kind of year? Well, I can't wait. As we get further along with these games and we move into the season of nothing going on, two things for all of our listeners. One, thank you. Number two, we're going to try to have a couple more surprise guests before the holidays. Definitely going to take off some time and ramp back up here in the Tal Grace Marketing and Media Studios. But, you know, as we get through, we definitely need to look into, like, who's been disappointing through the year and who has – you know, made progress through the year, and who are major picks in the 2022-23 calendar, however the hell they do this.
Okay.
But I'm going with the Justins down there. Final thing here, and let's close this podcast up here. I recently read that there is only one day, Teague, speaking about the good old boys club, there is only one day that if you're at St. Andrews that you can go inside the clubhouse.
Really?
And have a public tour. You're either in a member of the
one day.
You're either a member of St. Andrews and the RNA, good old boy,
right.
Red Coat Club,
yeah.
Or you know, on November 30th, you can.
Why go. November 30th?
That's the day. That's the one day. So the one day is November 30th. If you're Johnny Public, you can go to St. Andrews, go through the clubhouse, see the library, see kind of what they have, except for. It's only on the first floor. You can't go to
a floor. You can't go to the second floor.
The second floor and the third. I don't know. There has to be a third floor.
There is. It's a pretty big building. Yeah, I've played St. Andrews.
Right, yeah.
It's obviously didn't go to the clubhouse. So that's why
everybody goes to all the pubs right next door to head up their scorecards. I was watching something on St. Andrews. The Golf Channel had a nice little documentary about St. Andrews and the upcoming playing of the Open. But, you know, they were talking about, at Dooligan's, and they're all signing their scorecards and tallying up. And I was like, well, why wouldn't you want to go in there? But now I know you can't go in there. Even if you play that day, you're not going inside that building. Now they I'm going to definitely coordinate my first travels over at some point in time.
I'm
going to be playing on the 30th.
I had to drive into one of those pubs. I got a ball in one of them. What an awesome place, man.
I can only imagine. I can't wait to go there. I can't imagine. I've played it on, you know, Tiger Woods before.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger Woods.
You know, it was really cool. So my dad and I played. We didn't know we were going to get on. We went. We just waited. And we were able to get in, and a foursome only had two, so they paired us up. We played with two locals, and it was so cool. They were awesome to play with, but you know, we played with two Scottish guys, and it was just so awesome.
Right.
Cool.
And you know, and Bill recently, you know, going back to the Scottish pros, I mean, this gentleman named Colin Moffitt,
who
was, you know, your
cousin. Yeah, so Jordan, my cousin Jordan's girlfriend's dad, a longtime British PGA pro. So he was a pro over in Scotland.
Right.
Played the senior tour there a little bit, and then did some work over at Stream Songs for Jordan.
Yeah, he worked at. He said some golf courses.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he worked at some great golf.
He did. He did. A great guy. I took some money from him at Top Golf once too.
But, there you go.
Yeah.
So you're a top golfer.
I am a top golfer.
Teague's gonna, when this thing gets built, he will be all time hustler.
Hey, I still hold the record at Cincinnati.
Oh, is that right?
We went. So it's been like 4 years, or whatever, but nobody's topped my record.
I like it. Mm-hmm. I like it. I need to know what that record is in the Guinness Book World Records because I feel like
825 holes. I looked it up.
825 holes with the new LED light bulb. I mean, that's
it can be done.
Oh,
I
used to play speed golf.
So when Bill did it, my job was to tee up the balls. So we had like 10 balls teed up on every hole, and I'd run, I'd tee up the ball, and he just it was nuts.
So you never teed up a ball. You just drive up.
That was my job. So right. I was little.
Yeah.
But it was my job to make sure all the balls were teed up. And I had like 10 in a row teed up. It was nuts.
My last 108 holes I played, with Coach Crum.
Really?
Yeah, it was great.
Did he play all of them?
Oh, he did. No, he played 96 holes. He played 96, and then he left after that, and Paul Rogers and I finished out. But
I have some Coach Crum stories.
Man, I still have the scorecards. He played the first, and this is a quick story. He was coming back from Seattle, had a red eye from Seattle from some sort of NCAA thing. Yeah. And he and the night before, of course, I being a young assistant pro former caddy, I was probably in a pub somewhere,
right?
Local pub, and I had made bets that, you know, everybody was like, especially some former caddies, like, oh, you know, Coach Crum's good player, this, that, and the other, and
right.
He had like an 8 handicap, something like that back in the day. So he flies this red eye coming back from a meeting from NCAA. We're playing at Midland Trail Golf Club.
Yep.
And we're playing 9 holes fast as we can. It's a threesome, Paul Rogers, 100 holes for charity. And I made all these bets, probably had $200 out.
Okay.
And, you know, and it was going to be his handicap versus mine, this, that, and the other.
Right.
And so the dude comes out, shoots from this red eye, 38 on the front nine. Uh-huh. I mean, like 2 over par.
On like a 15.
Yeah, and I shoot like, you know, 40. And I mean, you know, yeah. We're playing ready golf, and right. You know, putts are good. Go, I shoot like 40 or something. I'm like, oh my God, he's going to beat me. Back nine we play, he shoots 38 again. I shoot like 36. So okay. I kind of tied it up. And then he had one where I shot like under par, and then he was like at par. And so he played great the yeah. whole day. And I told him afterwards, I said, Coach, do you want me to go across the street and put these scorecards in over at Valhalla? And he's like, no, son, you're not going to be doing it. And one of the times, the best is that he hit a ball, and like literally we both drove it off one of the holes, and he played my golf ball by mistake. And I was like, Coach, I don't think you played that golf ball. He was like, what? He was like, I was the furthest one drove. I was like, yes, funny. You were. I mean, what a great guy. I mean, and it was an unbelievable day for me.
I've got a Coach Crum story. I'll tell it in a later date.
Yeah, we'll definitely, as basketball season, we get back to the holiday table again. For all my friends in the 502, I'm throwing the L's up this week. L's
yeah, well,
up.
At least you're not putting them down. That I don't understand the L's down thing. Look, UK beat that ass, all right? Okay. But the whole L's down thing, it's like...
Man, I mean, when there's an L's up, there's going to be an L's down. I mean, that's how it just works. But I'm throwing them up, man. Bro. I'm throwing them up this week.
Well, of course you are.
L's up. Hey, thank y'all. Check us out everywhere. Bill Ridge, thank you very much for coming in. Loopers for Life, we are at Game 29. We'll be back for Game 30 at sometime soon. Powered by Tile Grace Marketing and Media. Thank you.